Here's our chance to make it. Hey, if we focus on our goals, if you can dish it, we can take it. Just remember that you've been told, hey, it's a different world.
It's a different world.
It's a different world.
It's a different world.
Than where you come from. Ooh, than where you come from.
What's up, Home Slices? I'm your host, Kiara, and I am back from a 3-week hiatus, and I feel rested. I kind of abruptly decided to take a break from creating new episodes because I was falling behind in too many areas of my life and needed some time to reset. I went on vacation, spent some time with family, and I even did some planning for the future of Submedia Reviews in the background as well. So I'm trying to be more intentional with creating opportunities to rest. So moving forward, I've incorporated a fall and spring break into the Submedia Review schedule. This is going to give me time and opportunity to plan even bigger and better things for the podcast while relieving the weekly hustle and bustle of putting out new episodes for you all as well. So this change is going to be good for all of us. I want to say a special thanks to my loyal listeners for supporting Submedia Reviews, and I really can't wait to show you all what I've been working on over the break. There's some cool stuff coming up, so make sure you're following us on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, and YouTube at Submedia Reviews to stay up to date on what's coming next. Now let's get to our regularly scheduled programming. Welcome to Submedia Reviews, the podcast that never needs spoiler alerts because it takes you back in time to relive the nostalgia of classic TV shows and films that you've probably already seen. I'm your host, Kiara, and each week I'll dive into the archives to bring you my take on movies and TV shows from at least 20 years ago. From cult classics to forgotten gems, I'll review them all and give my honest opinion on their impact and whether or not they still hold up today. Join me as we revisit the iconic characters, memorable moments, and timeless themes that made these shows and films so special. So take a break from adulting and get ready for a trip down memory lane with Submedia Reviews. What's up, Home Slices? Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Submedia Reviews. I'm Kiara, and I'm so excited to review the 1987 to 1993 hit television series, A Different World, featuring Kadeem Hardison as Dwayne Wayne, Jasmine Guy as Whitley Gilbert, Daryl Bell as Ron Johnson, and Charnell Brown as Kim Reese, among many others. This spinoff of The Cosby Show gave us a look into the historically black college slash university experience, which had never really been televised before. This show came out before I was born, so I invited my dad to join me. Say hi, Dad.
Hello, everyone. How y'all doing?
Now, you may remember him from the reviews of Friday the 13th, Halloween, and Die Hard. So I'm really excited to have him back here to share his perspective as a young black man who watched the show in its heyday. Now, before we get into the fun facts, I want to acknowledge that I recognize that Bill Cosby has been accused and previously convicted of heinous crimes against women. The conviction has since been overturned. And I think it's really awful that someone of his stature would commit such acts and mar his legacy. But as we dive into this review, we're going to be focusing on the series and not the person who created it or produced it. Now, as always, here are a few fun facts about the show. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the beginning of the show. In the first season, Denise Huxtable, who's played by Lisa Bonet, experiences her first year at the HBCU, Hillman College, along with her white roommate, Maggie Lawton, who was played by Marissa Tomei. For whatever reason, someone thought it would be interesting to follow the story of a white person at a black college. Dad, what do you think about this?
It was bothersome then. And even when I rewatched those first two episodes, I was like, yeah, it was just placement. He's like, hey, we got to have a white face to maybe get some white viewers to watch this. And I think that's what it really was.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, that storyline does not interest me at all.
Right. And I love Marissa Tomei from what she did. One of my favorite. I like her in general. Yes. And, you know.
Yeah, I enjoy her too, but just she felt out of place.
Yes. And having gone to an HBCU, yeah, it was very far-fetched. And I don't know if they ever even, like, addressed it. I don't remember. Did they ever say, like, why are you going here? I'm not, it didn't kind of be rude, why are you going here? But, you know, it's a valid question. So how did you end up here? You know, but I don't think they ever did it. It was still white run Hollywood, and they were like, give us a white face. And I don't know what happened in later seasons when she left and what made them, what did somebody put their foot down, or maybe it just wasn't tracking. But after that, she went on to do great things. So I don't know if it was that. Maybe she wasn't available. Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows? But while they were playing roommates on the show, co-stars Lisa Bonet and Marissa Tomei actually lived together in real life. Originally, the character of Whitley was only to appear in the pilot episode, but she became so popular that she became a regular, and it made Jasmine Guy the star of the show. And the inspiration for the accent of Jasmine Guy's character Whitley came from her fifth grade teacher, Miss Pinkford.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah, it's very Urkel-esque, right? Like, Urkel was only supposed to be in Family Matters for, like, a show, an episode, and people loved him so much that, you know, the show essentially became his show.
Well, he took over that show, so that's a little different. They could have called the show Urkel.
They could have, yes. That makes sense. Some people did.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the second fun fact is that the show was revamped for the second season, not only due to Lisa Bonet's departure, but also in response to criticism that the show didn't accurately depict a historically black college or college life in general. Debbie Allen, who was named producer prior to season two, began to draw on her own experiences as a graduate of Howard University to add to the show. In addition, Allen and the show's writing staff would make annual visits to black colleges to research campus life, issues, and events, and employ these factors on the series. Maggie's disappearance after the first season was never explained, but personally, it was probably best for the show.
Right.
Yeah. And the final fun fact, the show's theme song was sung by Phoebe Snow in the first season. It was sung by Aretha Franklin in seasons 2-5. And in the final season, it was sung by Boyz II Men. Dad, what's your favorite version of the theme song?
Aretha Franklin. I just.
Yes. Obviously. Yes.
And I get the progression to Boyz II Men. I get it. Mm-hmm. And then they also had a change in characters in that season. So
yeah,
it made sense. But but Aretha, it's hard to top Aretha.
I agree. Yes. Now, if you want to check out A Different World, you can watch it on Max as of the recording of this episode. Now, this is the point in the show where we talk about our personal connections to, in this case, A Different World. Dad, what is your personal connection to this show and what makes it so iconic?
Well, already talking on the HBCU factor, I went to North Carolina A&T for a little bit. And so it was good to see them try to portray that life. Also, the Cosby Show being so huge, coming up in the 80s, you want to see what other, you know, fields could come off. And that was, you know, showing black people in a good light instead of, you know, negative light. And mm-hmm. you wanted to see that. And then it was, what do you say, 87 it started. So I was, what, 18? That was right in my wheelhouse there. So really the people more or less my age. Yeah, I was very, very influential. One thing I do want to mention, though, when it was coming out during those years, I didn't realize it was like 22, 23 episodes a season. it didn't feel like that many, but when we were doing research, I was like, wow. And it was like consistent. It wasn't like 10, then 23. It was 22, 23 all the way through the season. So that's a lot of shows.
Yeah, it is. Across the 6 seasons, there are 144 episodes, which is a lot. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, for me, my personal connection is, of course, not the same because I'm, you know, was born during the time this show was on. But I got into A Different World about 7 or 8 years ago when I just got kind of curious and decided to watch the entire series. I think it was on Netflix at the time. So since then, I probably have been through the series 2 or 3 times. And I'm so glad I got into it because even decades later, I understood the hype behind the show. I don't know that I've ever seen a show depict college life so well and like cover so many topics and themes that are related to like being at that stage in your life.
I didn't realize you never like watched it in like late 90s reruns or 2000s. I didn't know that. I thought you had watched it.
No, I knew of it and like maybe could name a character or two, but never really dove into it at all.
Awesome.
Yeah. But while I didn't attend an HBCU and I can't identify with some of the activities that are specific to HBCUs, I think that most of the show is quite relatable. They talk about sex and relationships. They have important conversations about race, gender, domestic violence, etc.
Actual school stuff.
Yes. Oh, yes. The grades. Yes.
Right. And tuition and stuff like that. And
yeah.
Yeah.
But I feel like the show was really ahead of its time, and it covered a wide array of issues that are things that people really deal with. And so additionally, the show continued the legacy of The Cosby Show as a spinoff, and it reached an audience that actually grew up watching The Cosby Show. So it's an interesting way to keep the same audience as they age.
Right. Right.
Oh, finally. Okay. This show has so many great people in it. The guest star cameos are amazing. Oh, yeah. And even
yeah, that's crazy. Just a few we watch, we're like, oh, there's so-and-so. That was great.
Yes. And even many of the recurring characters are great, too. We have Sinbad as Coach Walter Oakes, Cree Summer, who is, you know, voice actor extraordinaire, Glenn Turbin as Colonel Brad Taylor, Don Lewis as Jaleesa Benson, Lou Myers as Vernon Gaines, a young Jada Pinkett, Bumper Robinson, who really does not get enough credit for being like a 90s repeat in a lot of shows. We have Karen Melina White, who we love. We also have recurring characters who are legendary, like Diane Carroll, who played Whitney's mom, or Patti LaBelle, who played Dwayne's mom. We got Jennifer Lewis, who played a college dean in the last season of the show, and even a young Loretta Devine, who played like an RA character in season one, which is crazy. Yeah,
forgot all about that.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and there were other notable guest stars, like En Vogue was in an episode, Halle Berry, Whoopi Goldberg, Tisha Campbell, Heavy D, Lena Horne, Jesse Jackson, Gladys Knight, Tupac, Chris Cross, Blair Underwood. Like, this show was like a great place for a lot of people to either kickstart their careers, or like a way for us to see people that we have loved and, you know, thought were legendary and who are really cherished in the Black community. So I love that aspect of the show, too.
Yeah, and I told you, Glenn Thurman is legendary just for Cooley High, which you have to go back and watch. Because
I have not seen it.
And it's a funny thing. He's always looked, he doesn't age. He was playing a high schooler in that movie, and he looked like he was 20-something. But it was portrayed in the 60s, but made in the 70s. So, but yeah, you'll have to go back and watch that.
Yes. And Glenn Turman was also previously married to Aretha Franklin. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was crazy. I didn't know that.
So yeah, well, I'm super excited to dive into a different world. As always, when it comes to series, we'll do a quick overview of the show and the main characters, and then we'll do a deep dive into two of the more iconic episodes of the show. So let's
now go wait. Into- I want to. I got to go back on the characters. So I'm trying to remember the bleed over from the Cosby. I know Claire Huxtable came in. She did an episode. Theo came in, right? Didn't he do?
There was didn't an episode in? Where Theo came to the.
Was it any Bill Cosby? Never. I don't think he did. He ever? Yeah, he was on the phone. Yeah, he was in an episode. That was like the one about the tuition. I know
for sure.
Yeah.
For sure, Rudy came to the school.
She came to it. The one I saw, she was just on the phone. She was calling home. But so okay. I don't remember. Oh, shoot. Rudy came to it. Okay, I don't remember. Right. So yeah, that was cool. People wanted to see them in that environment. So that was a good way to get people to watch.
Yeah. I want to say even after Denise left the school, there may have been an episode where Claire came and taught etiquette. At like a business class?
Maybe some, yes.
So yeah, they did eventually like that, the piece of it being kind of a spinoff kind of
died
petered off.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, in the beginning, there were greater ties to it being, you know, Cosby related.
But I can't think of another show that had a college, you know, was college theme, another sitcom. Maybe there was like a drama I'm thinking of somewhere in the head. In movies.
I don't know. I'm having a hard time thinking of one too, because the ones that I'm thinking of are usually ones that actually start with a person in high school
right.
and then when they go to college, right?
Like so Fresh Prince did it a little bit.
Right. Fresh Prince or Moesha or even like Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Like once they start to get older, they transition.
Say Bye to Belle, did they go to college? I think.
Ooh, I don't know.
I never really watched it, but I thought I remembered him. Talking about there. Yeah, but there were high school shows that transitioned into something with the college, but it.
Yeah. Boy Meets World did too.
Oh, okay. Never watched that.
Yeah. But I can't think of a show that the main setting was a college and stayed that way.
Right.
And I'm probably tripping because there probably is one that isn't coming to mind.
Right. Or maybe I didn't watch it and I didn't really know, but okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's dive into the description of the show. Now, A Different World is a series that focuses on college life at the fictional HBCU Hillman College in Virginia. Originally designed as a spinoff of The Cosby Show that would focus on Denise Huxtable's transition to college with her white roommate, the show quickly evolved to highlight a few of the main characters that we will talk about now. First up, we have Dwayne Wayne, who is played by Kadeem Hardison. Now, arguably, he is the main character of the show. He was goofy, nerdy, and known for his characteristic flip-up glasses and for his sense of flirting with girls on Hillman College's campus, along with his best friend, Ron Johnson. He was an excellent math student, tutor, and teacher throughout the series. Over time, Dwayne matured from a flirtatious wannabe ladies man to a mature and respectable educator. His on-again, off-again relationship and eventual marriage to Whitley was the most kind of the biggest storyline really on the show.
Right. Yeah, it was.
Dad, tell me about what it was like for the flip-up glasses in the late 80s. Was that a major trend because of the show?
I couldn't stand them. I was like, it is so corny to me. And I'd never, if I saw it, was in my region of the country. I don't remember. And I wouldn't, it just doesn't seem a thing, but it was kind of perfect for what they were trying to do. You got a guy, he's going to be your main male lead, and he's got his own characteristic of the glasses. And, you know, you think of that, you think of him. So I don't remember even taking off after that. It wasn't like everybody got them. I don't remember that, but I see why they would do it, just to give him his own look. Mm-hmm. But the man that flip up, it was, I was not a fan.
Hmm, interesting. Mm-hmm. I would have figured that everybody would want a pair.
Yeah. If I just never saw it catching on. I never saw it myself. So I was in it. I was joining the military around when it came out. And was overseas for a year, came back, and never, but I never did see. I can't remember it seeing it anywhere.
Okay. Well, at this point, I guess I can point out that I actually, after rewatching some of the episodes for this review, I actually don't think that Dwayne was actually the great guy that we think he is. I found him to be like a little toxic. So that's if
the
you.
90s, yeah.
Yes, if you rewatch it and you see some of the ways that he reacts to Whitley, like there's an episode where they go on their honeymoon and he pretends to leave her on the street. There's actually a famous episode where he and Whitley are arguing about what goes in their apartment, and he comes back to her and he kind of yells at her and snaps at her, and then she follows him, and I'm like, this is toxic. So it's kind of the same way. And Dad, I don't know if you are a big watcher of The Office, but the main relationship in The Office is Jim and Pam, and everyone thinks like Jim is like a really great guy, when like a lot of the things he does in the show is actually a little bit toxic, but he kind of gets a pass. So I feel similarly about Dwayne Wayne.
Yeah, I didn't watch Office that much. I know who you're talking about. I know their faces, and I've seen pieces here and there. But Dwayne, he portrayed late 80s, early 90s pretty good. Mm-hmm. I didn't take it. Whitley was a lot, and him being his, they were going to clash. So I took it as more of, you know, him just fighting back because he was, you know, he felt he had to put up with a lot from her and her family. So I think that's, I didn't come across him being too toxic, but there was times when he was like, he was a little extra with it, and I was like, that's didn't carry over too well, but
right.
It could have been, what it was, wasn't as funny. It could have been funnier, you know, and then it would have taken it better, but it was, he was taken a little harshly.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of it came across more mean-spirited, I think, is kind of what I'm trying to get across. But let's move on to Whitley Gilbert, who is portrayed by Jasmine Guy. Now, Whitley began the series with a snobby, prissy attitude, which pretty much stems from her very privileged background, which caused her to be disliked by many of the characters. Mm-hmm. Now, when Denise's character left the show after the first season, A Different World was retooled to feature her as the lead female character, and her attitude mellowed out a little bit. She was still over the top, but she didn't have the snobbish aspect of her attitude.
We didn't want to root for her, That first season was like, oh, get Whitley. But then, they mellowed her out and smoothed it to where she was palatable to,
Yeah, but Whitley is multi-talented, well-versed in the arts, and cares a lot for her friends and Dwayne. I believe her eventual career was like in some type of art buyer or art dealer.
Yeah, I couldn't remember what she ended up doing, but of course, she was an 80s, 90s crush. A lot of guys like her, including me. Mm-hmm. She is one thing that geography is big with me, so I always try to figure. So when I figure, Hillman was in Virginia somewhere because they talked about Richmond being kind of close. Mm-hmm. And then Whitley, the Southern Belle, I think she was from Atlanta. I remember her saying.
No, Whitley grew up in Richmond.
In Richmond, okay. I thought somebody was coming from Atlanta, okay. So, okay. Yeah, she was the Southern Belle. That was a thing. And she's an iconic sitcom character. I mean, very memorable. Maybe there was somebody in Designing Women was like that. I don't know if you remember that show.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of something here or there. But yeah, she's a top sitcom character of all time, I would say.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on to Ron Johnson, who was played by Daryl M. Bell. Mm-hmm. Now, he's known as Dwayne Wayne's best friend and partner in crime. Ron is a lot of comic relief in the show. Yeah. He's not the best student and actually took him 9 semesters to graduate. And in a lot of ways, he's kind of the opposite of Dwayne, which makes for a really dynamic friendship. Right. Eventually, Ron ends up in a serious relationship with Freddie and begins his career at the worst named nightclub in history. Dad, do you remember the club's name?
No, I don't. What is it?
Jesus. A Place Where the Blues Will Be Played. That's who is going to pay for that signage? Yes.
Wow. I kind of remember him now being a nightclub owner or manager or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Was it local too, right? Was it local to the area?
Yes, it was nearby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always, Ron, he was okay. He never was that funny, but you know, you always got to have a sidekick. But he did give it levity in there. When he needed it sometimes, because it was heavy subjects throughout that show. And he was he was the levity that they needed. I mean, you know, there were times where the show was like, ooh, that's serious. And he might not be in the episode or in the scene. I said, I could use a little Ron right here. But he had the usual 80s, 90s tropes, one-liners and zingers. And there were, yeah, he was all right.
Yeah. I like Ron. He's a good character to have on the show. Like you said, to, you know, lift the heaviness from talking about HIV or, you know, whatever topics popped up in the show.
Racism, everything. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And also, you know, to see his friendship with Dwayne, like that's a thread that they wove throughout the entirety of the series.
Yeah, I watched an episode. They were competing against the military guys with the colonel and going in the woods and looking for something. And they had some good moments together in that, you know, about their friendship. It wasn't, you know, so they wasn't just them gooping. They had some good dialogue and back and forth of, I think, what they wanted to do with their lives and where they were at and where they wanted to go.
Yeah. It was nice to see a good supportive, you know, friendship.
Right.
And how it evolved.
Right.
All right, well, let's talk about Jaleesa Vinson, who's played by Dawn Lewis. She was a non-traditional student who entered college at the age of 25. So she is years older than a lot of the other characters.
Right.
She was, in the first season, actually roommates with Denise and Maggie. And then she later roomed with Freddie. And then eventually went on to room with Whitley off campus. So she lived with most of the main characters. Jaleesa was a big sister figure. She always kept a job. And eventually was engaged to coach Walter Oakes. But they both ended their relationship at the altar. And I'm like, is that a recurring theme?
Right.
But later on, she elopes with Colonel Bradford Taylor out of nowhere, which I think all of us kind of hate that. That was very weird. Right. She starts her own business and then she has, you know, a child with Colonel Taylor. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the funny things is that every once in a while, there's like this joke on social media about how when Dawn used to sing on the show, how she actually wasn't that good of a singer. But like everyone in the show, like, or the audience would be going crazy for when she sang. And on social media, they're like, Dawn thought she was really doing something, which is
she
hilarious.
She was actually on a hip hop album by D-Nice. Can't remember the song. It said,
oh,
D-Nice featuring Dawn Lewis, and she was singing background, not background, but chorus or something. She sounded all right for the 90s. It wasn't one of his hits, but I had the album or the cassette, let me put it like that. She was on there, and that's had to be like, I want to say 90 or 91, something like that.
Okay.
But so she had, I don't know if she made a full album ever, but I guess she had some shots at something.
Okay, well, you know, I know that Jasmine Guy briefly tried to have a career as well, a singing career rather. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she had an
album. She had a pretty good voice.
I think she had an album, and I didn't buy it, but I looked at it. I remember picking it up at some point, like, okay. I don't remember any radio hits off of it or anything.
Yeah, who does? Next up, we have Kimberly Reese, who's played by Charnell Brown. Now, this highly dedicated overachiever and future doctor is roommates and best friends with Whitley Gilbert for a number of seasons, and a part-time worker at The Pit, which is the on-campus food spot and hangout. Right. She's also roomed with Freddie. Kimberly is very principled and in a lot of ways the opposite of Whitley. So she's kind of the female Ron in, you know, the show. She briefly dated Ron Johnson, but that, of course, was not meant to be. And by the end of the series, she was in medical school and engaged to another medical student named Spencer.
She'll be a pediatrician, I believe, right?
It's possible, but for whatever reason, I thought she wanted to be a surgeon.
Okay.
So I don't recall exactly. I actually really enjoyed Kimberly Reese. She, Kimberly was funny, but Ron was like a comic relief.
Right.
Kimberly was like a more like bring people back to earth.
Right. Relief. Like the, not a North Pole. What do they call it?
North Star or like a moral compass.
Yeah.
Or,
North Star. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I really enjoyed Kimberly and I
yes.
liked her story and like who she was as a character overall.
Yeah.
Okay, we have Winifred Freddie Brooks, who is played by Cree Summer. Freddie is a spiritual, energetic, compassionate, and, you know, could really be described as a free spirit. She's highly politically conscious and often engages in environmental, community, and charitable activities. As mentioned earlier, Freddie has been roommates with many of other of the characters. And for a long time on the show, she dated a character named Shaza Zulu, who was played by a young Gary Durden. But she cheated on him with Ron Johnson, who she eventually became serious with. By the end of the show, she had completed her first year of law school and was still dating Ron. Dad, what do you think about Freddie? One of the characters who they allowed to be biracial on the show. Because I believe Jasmine Guy is actually biracial, but
yes, her character definitely is.
Yeah. Is not. Yeah. Right.
Right. Yeah, I had a crush on Cree Summer. Oh, she was my favorite. She was just so bouncy and cute. Great smile. Their character got on my nerves occasionally, but she was... Yeah, she was cool. I do remember mention that she was biracial. But so she's not biracial in real life. I didn't know that.
Cree?
Yes.
That's crazy.
Is she or is she not?
Oh, okay. I'm not sure. Hold on. Okay. I can look it up real quick.
But I know Whitley is, or Melissa Gilbert. What is her name? I said Melissa Gilbert.
Jasmine.
Jasmine Guy. Yeah, I watched a couple things on her. It just, the timing was weird. They did an unsung and an uncensored on her on TV1. And they... So I know she was biracial, but Cree Summer, I don't know.
I don't know because it's saying that Cree's mom is definitely black, but her dad is a Canadian actor named Don Franks. But it doesn't say what his ethnicity is. Oh, he's white. He's very white.
Okay. So she is mixed. Okay.
His stage name was Iron Buffalo. He may be native as well.
Oh, okay.
So, yes, so she is biracial in real life, but on the show, it was her mother who was white, when in real life, it's her dad who is.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. Pretty cool character.
Yeah. I feel like I'm probably more so annoyed with her, but I do like that she was very forward thinking when it came to like the environment and politics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did really enjoy that about her character, and that felt true to life to me for like when people go to college and they, you know, learn new things and change the way they see the world. And I feel like Freddie was like a representation of that.
Yeah. It was current in a way where people were thinking then, especially young people, about all the topics she was talking about. And it was topical and it was, you know, it was believable for me. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, you know, mm-hmm. the college students would talk about this. They would, you know, be offended by that, be, you know, upset or wondering why things that way. So, but yeah. Very well represented.
All right. Let's move on to Colonel Bradford Taylor, who was played by Glenn Turman. Now, Colonel Taylor is a career U.S. Army man and veteran of the Vietnam War who was in the same unit with longtime buddy and fellow Vietnam vet Vernon Gaines, who served as a cook under his command. In addition to being a mathematics professor on campus, he also serves as the campus ROTC instructor. The colonel acts as a guiding figure to many of the students, particularly Dwayne Wayne, who followed in his footsteps and became a professor too. Things got a little weird when he started dating Jaleesa in season 5. And then I mentioned earlier, they got married and had a baby. Dad, what do you think about Colonel Taylor?
But Taylor, he was a good character. He was a father figure to some guys and... Mm-hmm. And then I remember Ron was ROTC. Mm-hmm. So that kind of, they had a little dynamic going on. So they incorporated him in there pretty good. But yeah, that was a little weird with him and Jaleesa. It was like, yeah, I just.
Didn't make no sense.
Right. But I guess sometimes, you know, we got to have a romantic something.
The craziest thing, I think it was a way to keep Jaleesa on because she had graduated and had moved on with
maybe
her
that's
life.
What it, yeah.
And that might have been a way to keep her on the show. But what's crazy is that when season 6 came around, well, at the end of season 5, they had just had the baby. Mm-hmm. And in season 6, Jaleesa is nowhere to be found. And like, neither is that baby.
Yeah, there was sitcoms would do that stuff back then. It would just people would disappear. I'm like, okay. But now we have the internet and we have social media and we would have heard about it. Or, you know, like so-and-so leaving the show. And yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Vernon Gaines, who is played by Lou Myers. He's often referred to as Mr. Gaines, and he is the owner slash manager of the Hillman College restaurant and hangout, The Pit. He's generally grumpy and outspoken, but he's worked at The Pit at least since Claire Huxtable attended the university. Right. So he's been there a long time. He also acts as a kind of guiding figure for the students, but in a way that makes you think of like maybe your crazy uncle who is annoyed a lot. Being a veteran himself and generally acquainted with the older men, he's pretty close to Colonel Bradford and Coach Walter Oakes. He often interacted with Kim Reese and was a kind of fatherly or guiding figure for her, as she was a longtime employee of his when she worked at The Pit.
Yeah.
I feel like his character felt a lot like somebody you would know in real life, more so than probably most of the other characters.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to Coach Walter Oakes. So I didn't want to do this episode without talking about Sinbad, who played Coach Oakes. So Coach Walter is a graduate student at Hillman College, and he is the football, baseball, basketball, and track coach, as well as the dorm director of boys' dorm called Matthews Hall. Now, Walter became involved in a serious relationship with Jaleesa, but they eventually halted their wedding at the altar as the two got cold feet. They stayed friends, though, and Walter was another guiding figure for the student, but he felt more like a big brother because he was actually still a student there and a little younger than some of, you know, the other characters. He had his own brand of comedy. I actually really enjoy Sinbad.
Yeah, Sinbad was, he's underrated.
Yeah, I feel like because I'm a little bit younger, I don't have the full appreciation for like how good Sinbad is, but him in the show, I really enjoyed him.
Yeah, he was pretty huge back then. He had a period, I want to say it's like 5 years where he was, he had specials, I want to say, on Showtime or HBO, a couple, and very, very in the public eye and doing well.
Hmm. Well, he left the show in season 4 to run a Philadelphia community center. That's what his character left to do. Yeah. Finally, we have other recurring characters who were played by, I don't know if I'm saying her name correctly, AJ Sanders, Jada Pinkett, Mary Alice, Cara Melina White, Lisa Bonet, and Marissa Tomei. So tons of recurring characters, but these are all of the kind of top main ones. Overall, A Different World really gave us a look into a different world from what we were used to seeing on television. Yeah. We got to see the characters learn and grow and develop careers and families and join the real world. So, Dad, unless you have anything else to say, we can get into reviewing our first episode.
I don't. Let's roll into it.
Okay, let's do it. All right, A Different World has 144 episodes packed into 6 seasons, and narrowing down just to 2 episodes was actually pretty hard. Mm-hmm. But first up, we're going to review season 2, episode 16, entitled It's Greek to Me. Mm-hmm. I chose the show because it was pretty specific to the Black college experience, and it explores Greek life through a Black lens, which I feel like, again, is something that's not often seen on television, like kind of even today. It also explores the friendship of Dwayne and Ron. So let's get into it.
Yeah.
Okay, the episode opens with Ron, Dwayne, and 4 other guys outside of the pit wearing purple sweats with like a large cockroach symbol on the shirt and also that same cockroach symbol on their foreheads. I couldn't tell if it was a sticker or it probably was, but they also wore tool belts that included household items like feather dusters, toilet scrubbers, and plungers. All of these guys are pledging to be in the Xi Beta chapter of Kappa Lambda Nu, which is a fraternity, and they've been going through the pledging process for 5 weeks at this point. I was pleasantly surprised to see Phil Lewis playing the big brother figure who's making the pledges, aka roaches, grovel and speak in unison and do trivial menial cleaning tasks to prove that they're worthy to be in the fraternity. If you're a younger listener, you may recognize Phil Lewis as Mr. Mosby from The Suite Life of Zack and Cody. Dad, do you know anywhere he might be famous from as well?
I can't put my finger on it.
I can't either. That's really the main place that I feel like I know him from. But I know that he's been in tons of stuff. Just nothing sticks out.
Yeah. But I will tell you that the Greek scene with them making them do stuff, there's a lot of truth to that. And I've personally witnessed some guys going through it and like, whoa, he's, they made it comical, but it was pretty serious back then.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you had ever considered being in a fraternity.
If I had stayed in school, maybe, but, you know, at the time I was there, no, not at the time, but it was very interesting and I can see the brothership and the camaraderie and, you know, I can see how people would enjoy that. But I didn't, you know, as freshmen, you really don't. That's not the time to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Greek life thing just wasn't for me. But yeah. Kim and Freddie are watching on as Ron and Dwayne and, you know, the other guys waddle, is what they call it. And Kim is like, yeah, this is what we're going to go through next year when we're pledging for a sorority. Mm-hmm. And Freddie is like, nah, not me. Like,
yeah,
I don't plan on groveling to get into a group. So we already have some differences of opinion on, you know, fraternities and sororities.
Yeah.
So next up, the Roaches line up and in unison, they say like a pretty humiliating chant about how they'll do whatever they're told. Mm-hmm. And like, there's no, we're no better than what you scrape off the bottom of your shoe. And all of the pledges have embarrassing nicknames like Dead Battery, which is Dwayne's name because he has no juice, and Parasite, which is Ron's name. I didn't catch any of the other nicknames.
Yeah.
But yeah, the two guys who are in the fraternity who are running the pledges or like telling them what to do are called Big Brother Chip St. Charles and Big Brother Sam Lee. And so they quiz Dwayne on a pretty trivial piece of their frat history, and Dwayne gets it wrong. And then when Ron is called to answer the same question and gets it right, that puts Dwayne to shame, which is frowned upon by Big Brother Sam Lee. So it's one of those situations where like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Yeah. There's really no right answer. There is something pretty, is it sadistic, the word that I'm looking for?
That's a good thing.
The Big Brothers seem to get a lot of pleasure out of creating these like menial, impossible tasks for these guys.
Yeah, because I mean, it was done to them. If that's the history of it, it's done to you, and you do it to the guys coming up. And that's the way it is. So some of the, being in the military, there was some of that aspect to it too of, you know, there was times when you, if damn if you do, if you damn if you don't in the military. So there's some of those little aspects to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Today we call it hazing, and it's and it's quite illegal. There are a number of fraternities that have been, what's the word, banned
like from campuses? Some of them are under investigation or kicked off of campus. There's all kinds of stuff that would happen.
Yeah. It's a very serious issue.
Right.
So, yeah. But Ron, when he is shamed for making Dwayne look stupid, says, no, we're equally stupid. And then the two friends bump fists, which Sam Lee doesn't like, but it found that it was cool that, like, even though they were kind of pitted against each other in this moment, that they, you know, are still friends.
Right.
And it doesn't matter to them. But Whitley enters the scene, and Sam Lee obviously has a crush on her, and he's bumbling a little bit, and he's offering weird compliments to Whitley. And so he basically doesn't have any game. And so Dwayne leans over to Ron and another pledge, calling Sam Lee Big Brother Sorry Rap, which causes them to laugh. That was an old term. Rapping to someone meant something different back in that time. And so Sam Lee, of course, isn't happy at being laughed at and demands that the three pledges smile for the next 8 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he gets all of them to, all the pledges to sit in the thinker pose. And we hear Dwayne and Ron talking about why we're putting ourselves through, these embarrassing task. And they talk about the type of business connections they'll have. The women like Greek guys, apparently. They'll have an increased social status. And to me, I don't know if it's worth it. Dad, do you think all of that would be worth the embarrassment of, you know, 5 or 6 weeks of having to grovel?
I don't know. But the popularity was cool. I'd look at them guys and I was like, that's pretty cool. They have their own little sections on campus that nobody's allowed. They have their own little handshakes. They could do. Yeah, it was cool. The step shows, it was awesome. Still to this day, I'll watch a step show. It's pretty cool. I could see the appeal, but if you don't want to be that demeaned or put down to be in a group, it's a hard decision, but I don't fault people for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that. Well, back at the girls' dorm, Kim, Freddie, and Dawn are organizing an event for kids, and the magician they hired isn't going to show up. That comes back later, but they never say what this event is for. It's just kids coming to the college,
yeah,
and they're going to show for them. And it's like, they never say why. There is a big element of like community and like doing things for community throughout the show, but they could have at least named a reason. That was crazy. Anyways, Dwayne and Ron enter the girls' dorm lobby where Big Brother Sam Lee instructs them to clean Whitley's room, but to stay away from her underwear drawer. In Whitley's room, it's clear that Ron is taking pledging a lot more seriously than Dwayne.
Yeah.
It seems like Ron has his eye on the prize and is really focused on like that light at the end of the tunnel, while Dwayne is sick of the treatment that he's getting and he wants to do normal things that don't involve cleaning or groveling, including studying, because this process has been so intense that they, you know, haven't been able to study as well.
Right.
Ron is doing unhealthy things like eating instant coffee to keep his energy up. And when Whitley comes back to her room, she finds the guys cleaning and is annoyed that Sambly sent them there without her knowledge. But she allows them to stay so they don't get in trouble. Dwayne tells Whitley that Sambly has been doing these little nice gestures for her because he really likes her. And so Dwayne reveals that information, hoping that he can get Whitley to butter Sambly up to see if Dwayne and Ron will actually get into the fraternity. Because mm-hmm. Dwayne is like, I don't want to continue to go through this if I don't even have a chance to get in. So Whitley is offended because they are asking her to feign interest in someone that she doesn't really like, which could involve going out on a date with him. And yeah, she doesn't want to do it. But she ends up changing her tune to a flirtatious one when Sambly arrives and scolds the boys for being in her room. Sambly tells the pledges that they are volunteering to put on a show for the kids at the event tomorrow, in addition to setting up decorations for the kids. And the guys vow to do favors for Whitley in exchange for her kindness. So Whitley does eventually decide to hang out with Sambly to figure out whether or not they're actually going to get into the fraternity. Now, in a different scene, I feel like it's a little weird, this next scene coming up, where Dwayne, Ron, and other male students are in the locker room.
Yeah, that was weird.
Dad, was this scene weird to you? Okay.
Yeah, that was weird. I was like, what are they doing? Why?
Yeah. It looks like a locker room, but it could just be like the community bathroom in a dorm.
Yeah.
But Ron is in a shower stall holding a conversation with Dwayne, who is outside of the shower stall on a bench with like a textbook. And Dwayne is like, you know, us pledging means that we don't have time for stuff like personal hygiene or studying or figuring out what they're going to do to entertain the kids tomorrow. So Sambly comes into the room as well and asks about their act, essentially. And another weird part makes Ron pull a fully clothed Dwayne into the shower stall with him and demands that the now wet Dwayne rolls around on the locker floor to mop it up. Dwayne is over it.
Yeah.
Understandably. And demands that Ron join him in quitting. And Ron doesn't want to. And they get into this pretty heated argument with both sides having some validity, right? Like yeah. Ron sees the long-term goal. His father was in the frat as well. So there's probably an element of like trying to make his father proud or having something in common with his dad. And Dwayne is done impugning his dignity. And so they both, you know, angrily go their separate ways and Dwayne quits and Ron chooses to continue.
Yeah, I thought that was a good scene between them two being best friends. And it really, both of them having valid arguments to why they felt that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, friendships aren't always, you know, ice cream and roses. Mm-hmm. They have disagreements. And this moment got pretty heated. And I think, I don't know a whole bunch about the pressure that people experience about like maintaining their status throughout the generations in different fraternities or sororities. But I think part of the kind of discourse here is for people to see that some people choose to be in sororities or fraternities and some don't. And that's just, it's okay.
Yeah.
Like
it's very involved. It's very involved. I would do it. There would sometimes be what you call underground pledging, especially I believe if you were a freshman, that you wouldn't even know somebody is pledging until like they kind of come out and have a little line and they'll be walking together and dressed together. Like you see them walking around like, oh, it was one time I did. I was, oh, I didn't know so-and-so was doing that. He missed it. He said he was underground and it's very involved. And I don't know how they would find the time to do all that between school and... And some of the guys were athletes and stuff. Like, wow, how do you even, yeah. But I do have a pretty funny story about fraternity pledging from my time in college. We were, my buddy, were in this girl's dorm room. A couple of girls were roommates and we were in there socializing, playing cards, hanging out. Now, and you know, we've been in there a little while. I'm going to say about 45 minutes. And they get a knock on the door. And it's a guy, one of the pledges, I can't remember what fraternity. And it's a guy we knew. And he came in and they kind of, trying to get funds for their pledging, you know, because they got to buy all this You got to buy boots. You got to buy outfits. You got to give money to. So they have to go around soliciting money. So evidently down the hall, during the whole hall, there was other pledges and the lead guy was out there somewhere. So he steps in and they close the door and he goes, y'all, I'm so hungry. They won't let us eat. And this, and I haven't had nothing since yesterday morning or something like that. And mind you, we've been in there for, like I said, about an hour. They hadn't offered us nothing. All of a sudden, out of every cubby hole and corner, here comes snacks. I was like, oh, they ain't offer us nothing. And they gave him all that. And, we do okay. And then I was like, oh, whatever. I was like, and he got out of there. I was like, man, we got played. I think we called him out on it, too. I said, we've been sitting here, they can't offer us nothing. So it was pretty funny. He was serious. You can tell he goes, I'm so hungry. And he had to kind of keep it down because he had stepped in the room and closed the door because I guess the overseer, if you want to call him, was out there. And when he ate that stuff, he shoved it down quick and got back out there. But I thought that would be a good little story.
Oh, yeah. That is hilarious that they shouldn't be starving people out here. But later in their dorm, Whitley comes to visit Dwayne to report back on her recon with Big Brother Sam Lee. She was not happy about it. He took her to a restaurant that she didn't like, and she kind of was rambling on about that, but eventually got to the point where she said that Sam has every intention on inducting both of them into the frat, and that Ron is actually the best pledge he's ever seen. Now, Dwayne is mad about this, and he told Whitley that he quit already, and she, of course, was unhappy with him because she went through all this trouble of eating at Moo Burger, you know, to get this information for him. So Whitley confronts Dwayne regarding his lack of support for Ron and how, you know, if you don't get your act together, you might actually lose Ron. Because when people join fraternities, they have a whole new brotherhood.
Yeah.
And it's very easy for you to lose touch with someone who gets more immersed into the fraternity. So I think Whitley made a really good point that, like, you know, it's okay that you all didn't do the same thing. And like, one of you wants to join and one of you doesn't, but your attitude is like really nasty about it. And you could lose Ron over this.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So the event for the kids is coming up and it happens the following day. And one of the remaining pledges in Ron are doing a puppet show of Little Red Riding Hood. And these kids, how old do you think those kids were? Maybe between 5 and 8-ish?
No, they were older than 5. I think they were.
You think, like, they were older?
I think it was like from 8 to 10.
Hmm.
Yeah, I didn't see. Okay. I don't remember seeing anybody. Yeah, I think I see about from 7 to 10, 8 to 10, something like that.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's a number of kids in there, maybe 15 or so kids. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's a puppet show of Little Red Riding Hood. The kids aren't engaged in the show. The writing of the play is pretty bad. And some of the kids are bad too. These kids, you know, aren't paying attention. They're sliding down banisters. And so Dwayne shows up and calls for a brief intermission while they revamp the show for the kids. So now it's time for take two of the show, and Dwayne gets everyone clapping on beat as he and Ron, who is now fully dressed as the Big Bad Wolf, and I'm like, where did these clothes come from?
Right.
They do an 80s style rap about Little Red Riding Hood. Dad, I cringed. I don't know. Rough. How did you feel?
And I couldn't even remember. I mean, I had forgot how bad. I was like, wow, it was awful. And it felt like a bad commercial. It was awful.
Okay, I thought I would be the only one. First off, because I'm a 90s baby, yeah. I have a harder time getting into 80s rap that has like a very specific cadence. Mm. Like,
that
cadence, I can't really get into. But there's another thing here. Like, I don't like this idea that Black youth can't get into things unless it's converted into rap music.
Right.
I feel like that's a big idea or a big belief. Like, even in the Cosby Show, when it was a Cockroach and Theo did a rap, and it's like, everything don't need to be turned into rap. Like, our attention spans. Right,
but you gotta remember the time. It was 80s, and rap was relatively new, just going big mainstream. And yeah, I'm sure the cast had something to do at talking the producers into that, bring that in, but it could have been better.
It definitely could have. I hated it. But on a positive note, the kids, of course, were more engaged and were more entertained. And, you know, Dwayne showed up to support Ron.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay. I thought that was good.
Well, now it is nighttime and all the pledges except Dwayne have purple jackets and are officially in the fraternity. I was trying to figure out how much time has passed, but they say later that this was like literally the same night or the next night. So Dwayne was like only a day away from being a part of the fraternity, which is quite interesting. Did you catch that?
Yeah, I was like, the timing was a little strange.
Yeah, I agree. But the guys in the fraternity head to the pit to get pizza, and Dwayne pulls Ron aside. Dwayne kind of sort of apologizes, but later admits that he was jealous that Ron was getting more kudos than he was. Mm-hmm. This is probably because Dwayne is really the golden child with the good grades, as opposed to Ron, who's kind of the screw up a little bit. So they don't think he could stand the shoe being on the other foot in this particular situation. Ron eventually warms up a bit and they both assure each other that they are and will always be brothers, and that, you know, they don't need the partnership of, or they don't need the brotherhood of the fraternity.
Right. Yes. No, they're brothers. Yeah. Very cool scene. That was a very cool scene. Heartwarming and something you didn't see too much of two males doing that. And it was very ahead of its time.
I agree. I found that their friendship really interesting. And for whatever reason, I don't know why. This is going to sound crazy, but them interacting in this scene almost felt a little romantic, but in a platonic way. There was something about the way that they were talking to each other that came across a little romantic, and it's really strange. And not that they were like literally interested or attracted to each other, but it's almost like a man can't bear his soul unless he's talking to a woman or trying to get with a woman. And so their approach to being emotional felt more romantic to me. I don't know.
Yeah,
I found that interesting.
I see what you're saying, but I think they wanted to go that route of their friendship. So, and they had to come out a certain way, and it hadn't really been done, especially on a black show like that with somebody that's not related. Like I've seen shows, fathers and sons, and maybe brothers do stuff or siblings, but I think they had to pull it off and make it, they have to get a little, what do you want to say, emotional. So I think it was done well, though. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. And it was one of those things where it's like everyone gets to make their own choices.
Yes.
And like, well, you can just be okay with that. It doesn't have to be
right.
An argument, you know, right. All the time. But back inside the pit, the frat is chanting. And so Ron goes to join them and Dwayne watches from the sidelines. Dad, do you think Dwayne feels upset that he gave up right before he would have joined, or do you think he feels good about his choice?
I think he is a little both, but I just know he wouldn't have been not the frat guy. It just didn't seem like it was his deal in general. So I felt that he felt, you know, he was fine for not joining, but if he felt it, I think he might have felt pretty good for his friend who really wanted it. And maybe that's what's
it. I think ultimately they both did what was right for themselves. So yeah, overall, this episode showcased a big part of college life for people who choose and don't choose to join in Greek life, which is a very big deal in the Black community. Mm-hmm. Both my grandmother and aunt were both AKAs, and there was some desire for me to be one as well. And I was like, nah, just my personal preference. I have four sisters. I don't need any more. And that was just, you know, my personal preference.
Not for everybody, but I understand.
It's not for everybody. Right. Exactly. But we get to see the strength of Dwayne and Ron's relationship, and we get to see them have a open and honest communication about their feelings, which, like, you know, Dad said earlier, does not seem very much. We see a bit of the community service element and a little bit of how, like, hip hop plays a role in this show and in that era. Yeah. Dad, anything else you want to add about that episode?
I'm trying to remember, did they ever flesh that out with the girls doing sorority?
I actually do not recall.
I know. I thought it could use another episode and flip it for the girls. I thought that would be the next logic. And the way the show is produced and manufactured, it stuff like that happens all the time. Like, oh, this is the take, you know, the opposite end of it. So I thought there was more meat on the bone that they could have spent, you know, with the girls or even with the guys. It could have been, like you said, it was a little thrown together. You know, I mean, okay, all of a sudden here they're in a frat. Oh, all of a sudden he's in and he's out. That's it. You know, it's like there's more to it than that. And it could have been a two-parter or an hour episode but the message was fantastic. I give it the overall message, and it still could have been good, but I need a little more context with how complex fraternities and sororities are.
I agree. And I could be wrong that there maybe later on down the line was a sorority episode, but nothing comes to mind. So, but I do agree that they could have explored it more in a future season at least.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the second episode that we're reviewing, which is arguably the most iconic one, which is season 5, episode 25, called Save the Best for Last, Part 2. Now, this would not be a true review of A Different World if we didn't cover one of the most iconic episodes in the series. Yeah. And we'll talk about why later. Now, this episode is actually part 2 of a 2-part season finale. So here's a quick rundown of what happened in part 1 for context. Now, everyone is gearing up for the wedding of Whitley Gilbert and newly elected Senator Byron Douglas III, who is played by a fantastic actor named Joe Morton.
Brother from another planet. Look it up. Look it up. You will bug out. Yes.
Now, you may recognize him as the dad or Eli Pope from Scandal, but he was also in Terminator 2. Now, the wedding is in Whitley's parents' home garden in Richmond, Virginia, which is about 45 minutes away from Hillman. And there's tons of like pre-wedding frenzy, right? We got even Dwayne and Whitley's friends don't think that Whitley will go through with the marriage or that Dwayne will let the marriage happen because they obviously still have feelings for each other. Now, just 14 episodes prior to this one, Dwayne and Whitley were engaged and broke off their engagement because Dwayne went on a date with another woman and didn't feel ready to take such a big step. So it's been about 6 months since they broke up, and Whitley worked on the campaign with the senator, and that's how they got to know each other. But interestingly enough, Dwayne and Whitley actually slept together 3 months prior to this wedding. So they are very obviously kind of like not over each other, right?
Right. And it bothered me that I was like, it just felt like you're just making a story. I guess that's how you know, have longevity in the show. You've got to have something to get over. I was like, they're going to be together. Just leave it alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whitley, of course, is insisting that she's over Dwayne, but it's pretty obvious that she's not. Now, later, Dwayne pops up at her house and they talk. Dwayne actually attended Byron's bachelor party where he, you know, of course, ends up being filled with regret and ends up leaving early. And so he pops over to Whitley's house and they do like what we call a postmortem on their on again, off again relationship. They're trying to seek some closure. They're walking down memory lane. They're giving each other credit for some of their growth. And they kind of seem confused that they didn't work out. And I think the kind of resolution or semi-resolution they come to is that it just wasn't meant to be. It just didn't work out. And so they end the conversation knowing that they still have some feelings for each other, but their chance to make something of it has pretty much run out. And so Dwayne Wayne climbs over the back wall of the garden to get out of there, which is hilarious. But
yeah, I thought that was pretty well written for me to, because I at one point I was like, I'm not believing it. They're just doing this just to have a final episode and this and that. But that conversation was pretty good about why they were not together.
Yeah, I agree. It was nice to see them have a conversation that was calm and like not him being frustrated at her or not her being, you know, frustrated at him and getting some closure.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So now let's talk about this actual episode, episode 25. Now, Whitley gets woken up by her overbearing and classist mother, who isn't shy about praising Byron and the fact that he's a senator and rich and putting down Dwayne Wayne's kind of, you know, blue collar family. When Whitley brings up that Dwayne visited her, her mother totally dismisses it. And I'm low-key not mad at her. Like, do not be talking about your ex on your wedding day.
Right.
Also, she hates her mother, again, is played by Diane Carroll and can't stand Dwayne's family. And Dwayne ended his engagement with her because he went on a date with another woman, which, you know, some people would view as cheating. So I could understand why she wouldn't
want to talk about him at all. That. Yeah.
Right. Right. So back at Dwayne and Ron's apartment, Dwayne is frustrated and can't seem to get his tie right for the big day. And so Ron is like, I need to head out early. And Dwayne is like, you know, I'm just not going to come. I'm not going to go give Whitley my gift. And even though Ron says, you know, Kim visited Ron in the previous episode and said that she wasn't sure that Whitley would go through with it. So Ron is like, you know, I got some intel from Kim that Whitley might have some second thoughts or some cold feet. And, you know, even that doesn't inspire Dwayne to come to the wedding. So back at the wedding, tensions run high between Whitley's parents, including Whitley's new stepmother, who is a much younger woman named Monica. Mm. The tension with Whitley's parents is hilarious to me. Yeah, they insult each other. They insult each other frequently. It's hilarious. Dad, does this episode, do you think it feels true to life about like the frenzy around being at a wedding?
Yeah, and family dynamics and stuff like that, because there's an aunt mm-hmm. or a ex or a broken up mom and dad at me there. And yeah, it's mm-hmm. I thought it did pretty good. It wasn't too over the top yet, but it was
yes.
the lead up to it was pretty good. And then it was pretty good. And then the girls, you know, in the bridal chamber, I guess you want to call it, and getting her ready, that was pretty cool. And it was pretty accurate from the weddings I've been to.
Yeah. I thought so, too. There's a brief scene with Freddie and her boyfriend, Shaza Zulu, and they're being super earthy together, but that's not important. We get another quick scene between Whitley's mom, Marion, and Pastor Soames, who is a pastor who's officiating the wedding and who obviously really likes Marion. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, is he the type of priest that can like people or not?
I mean, he's a pastor. He was just a pastor. So, yeah, I mean, if he's single, I would think so.
Okay, so Ron shows up at the wedding as Whitley is getting ready, and he brings in Dwayne's gift.
I like how he barges in there. That was pretty good. He just barges in the yeah. bridal chamber.
Yes, he does, by distracting Whitley's annoying cousin.
Right.
And so Whitley has on the puffiest shoulder pads on her dress and a low bun, but I think she looks really pretty. And of course, it's like when you're getting married, your makeup is more, you know, exaggerated than usual. Mm-hmm. But she looked really nice. It was very, you know, 90s wedding, long train, beaded, and it just a low back. It was nice. Now, the wedding is about to start, so the only people remaining in the bridal suite are Kim and Whitley. And so they have this moment mm-hmm. where Whitley is like, you know, well, me and Dwayne only broke up 6 months ago. And she says that she's like feeling nauseated. Mm-hmm. And Kim fights the urge to tell Whitley to call off the wedding. Kim mm-hmm. is really like, girl, you know, you don't want to do this. But, you know, she's going to let Whitley make her own choices.
Right.
And so they put on a weird veil that has this weird pointy fascinator. I actually hate the fascinator piece. Mm-hmm. But now it's showtime. It's time for the wedding. I don't understand why she didn't call it off already, but whatever. For the drama, obviously.
Right.
But yes, it's time for the ceremony to start. And so a live band and a singer perform Ave Maria as the bridal party walks in. And so, like I said, this is in Whitley's parents' garden. The wedding is probably 40-ish people there, but Whitley is walked down the aisle by her father. And there's some interesting POV camera work as she makes her way to the altar.
Yeah, it was weird from the, like, from
yes, thank you.
It had to be from, like, the, not the pews, but the seats of the, I guess they were trying to get the view of the people turned around looking at them coming down the aisle, mm-hmm. I guess. It was a little strange. Yeah.
I agree. But she makes her way to the altar, and, you know, all the people she cares about are there, and a number of people from, you know, the school, classmates, things like that. I also want to point out one of the groomsmen is Orlando Brown.
Yes.
No, that's Orlando Jones. Orlando Jones.
That's his brother. That was supposed to be right. The groom's brother.
I believe yeah. so. Yeah. Yeah, the groom's brother is a young Orlando Jones, which is hilarious because he looks exactly the same.
Exactly the same. Yeah.
Yes, pretty much. The ceremony starts, and the one thing that I want to point out is that throughout, as the preacher is doing the conversation as the ceremony begins, they are showing little, like, side conversations or declarations from, like, the wedding guests throughout the scene. And so there's one point where the Pastor Soames starts to tell a story about Whitley, and then Ron in the audience is like, please wake me up when this is over. Or like they're showing these little side conversations, and I was like, that is pretty much how a lot of Black weddings go.
Right. Somebody got quiet. Yeah, they will say a little something. Mm-hmm. White yeah, dress, so no, really?
Yes, I thought that was very funny and felt true to life to me. Mm-hmm. But as the pastor is telling that story about Whitley, Byron's mom gets overcome with emotions and actually walks up to them while they're in the middle of the ceremony. The scene is actually quite goofy, but mm-hmm. the pastor finally makes it to the part of the ceremony where he says, you know, speak now or forever hold your peace. And Dwayne walks into the garden from, you know, the back of the room.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he is like almost ready to object, but he's nervous, of course. So he coughs instead, which draws attention to himself, which mm-hmm. is crazy. And so he sits,
but nobody up on the altar sees him. It's just a few people. Right.
They're more laser focused, right? Like the people in the audience kind of turn around and look back, but nobody else. And so he sits down. He looks scared. Mm-hmm. And the pastor asks if Whitley will be Byron's wife. And we see her having these kind of hallucinations. She envisions Dwayne as the pastor. Yeah. She envisions Dwayne as her mom and even Byron.
Right.
And so the pastor officially can't proceed without an I do from Whitley. So, you know, she's hesitating. Her mom is trying to pretend that she's her, like, be a ventriloquist. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you know, I do. Mm-hmm. Then her mom really wants her to marry Byron. There was a really funny part earlier when her mom and dad came to see her right before the wedding started. And her dad was like, you know, I'm so proud of you. And Whitley's like, you know, I haven't done anything. Right. And Whitley's mom is like, you're marrying a man that can support you.
Yeah, I'm like, oh boy.
Yes. So her mom is really insistent on that and really prefers Byron over, you know, Whitley's other suitors. But anyways, eventually, while Whitley is kind of hesitating and ruminating, Dwayne finally gets the courage to interrupt. And so he's yelling from the back of the room and he's trying to walk closer to the altar. And he's like, you know, he's like, I love you. And if you'll have me, I want you to marry me. And then, you know, we hear live studio audience reactions and they're all screaming and yelling, you know, because, you know, they can't believe he actually did it. And he is interrupting. And I've never actually witnessed anyone object at a wedding. Dad, have you?
No, I've never been to a wedding where somebody said something. Never.
Okay. Yes, but I probably would have a similar reaction if I ever witnessed, you know, something like that. But a number of people at the wedding are trying to hold Dwayne back. And I'm like, are these security?
I don't know. I just think they're friends of Byron, maybe.
I don't know. I mean, a senator getting married, there probably would be security there. So
maybe. Okay. Yeah. I didn't think like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But it wasn't 100% clear. But it's all these men in like black suits. You know, holding Dwayne back. And Dwayne is not a big guy. It was like four or five of them kind of on him. And Ron stepped in a little bit too to kind of help. But Dwayne, of course, is still yelling and begging for her to be his wife.
Please.
And yes, please, baby, please. Yes. He's still proposing to her to, you know, an engaged woman. And much to Marion and Byron's chagrin, you know, he's begging, baby, please. And Whitley finally says, I do. Everybody's confused because it's like there's two guys here. Who is she saying I do to? But Whitley eventually apologizes to Byron and runs to Dwayne. Byron and his family leave in a distinguished manner because I would have could have personally. Yeah,
there would have been some furniture and, moving up in there.
Right. Yes. Yes. But Dwayne and Whitley get married instead. And the way they do this, the ceremony doesn't feel legal.
No, no way. They could have, that was silly.
Yes. But the takeaway is that Whitley got married that day, but to her long time on again, off again boyfriend, Dwayne Wayne, instead of the rich senator.
Yeah. True love prevails.
Yes. I think everyone was kind of thinking the same as you, Dad. It's like, are they really going to let Whitley marry this guy and not be with Dwayne? I think a lot of people in the audience probably experienced some relief.
Right.
And this is a very iconic scene, the scene where he comes into the wedding and kind of steals her away from him.
Yeah, definitely.
Is iconic. But again, I find it a little toxic. Personally. So, yeah, but Marion, of course, is upset. Marion, again, is Whitley's mom, and she ends up fainting. But the crowd goes wild, and, you know, long-term girlfriend and boyfriend are now husband and wife. Yes. And that is the end of the fifth season of the show. Dad, what are your thoughts on this episode?
It was a long time coming. It was ever since, at some point, we knew they were going to get together when they were flirting, and she didn't like him way back in, what, season two or three, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, we know how soap operas sitcoms work. They're going to get together. So like I said, there's a lot of episodes in each season. I was like, you're building. All right, it's time for it to happen. And then when they weren't going to get some other guy, I'm like, oh, no, you're not going to rob us of this, you know, thing we've been waiting on. So when they milk it as long as they could, and everybody, that was a very iconic episode. So, yeah, very enjoyable. I remember, you know, it stays in your memory. One of those TV moments.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Now, for me, this is the happy ending that a lot of viewers were hoping for, especially since we had spent the second half of season five just like watching them go through a breakup. But, you know, the two main characters finally getting together was a peace of mind we all needed. And this, like you said, is very iconic and a cultural phenomenon. And we all know about this scene. And I knew about the scene before I even watched the show. So. Right. Yeah.
So another thing, we were talking about how it wasn't legal wedding. I thought the next season they could have addressed that. I don't think they ever said, oh, we went through a minister, what is it? Minister of the Peace? What is it called?
Oh, Justice of the Peace?
Justice of the Peace. It made it official, you know. Hey, they could have said something like that, but they, that was a little, okay, right? I know it's a sitcom, but there's no way that has any legal bound, you know, binding, you know, no.
Yeah. Well, you all, that's the end of our review. And at the end of every episode, we ask the same two questions. Does it hold up today? And is it worth a rewatch? Dad, what do you think?
One reason it didn't hold up, it was just so 90s. And it was so the studio audience and the old familiar lines. But it was so ahead of its time as a series. Just, you know, black young people in college. Nobody's even tempted to tackle that in TV form. But as far as, of course, the fashion is way out there. And then even when we were saying it, if you try to watch it on an HD TV, some of the screen doesn't fit. Sometimes the heads
right,
cuts
like
off.
Right, like the aspect ratio.
Yeah, it's off. So it's rough. It didn't hold up like that, even in technical standpoint. But I don't know what they'd have to do to fix that. But it was ahead of its time for the cultural facts. But the actual execution, not execution, but the just the way they used to do TV shows was outdated, but very enjoyable. A movie I recommend for listeners who want to get another aspect called School Days. Spike Lee's first movie or second movie. This is a college movie, a black college movie, with mainly about fraternities and fraternities. So recommend that to anyone that enjoys the show that hadn't seen that. And Kira, you're one of them. You need to see it.
I have seen School Days, Dan.
Oh, okay. Who hadn't seen it?
I think it was Arabia.
Okay. But yeah, I'd recommend that to get another aspect of it and get a little more in-depth. It's just as wild and crazy, but very good.
Yeah. Did you mention it? Is it worth a rewatch?
Definitely. I think it is. Definitely. I think it is. People, just to see what was on the forefront for young black people back then, just to see that. But we're, you know, now you see young black people doing all kinds of Black Lives Matter, protesting, speaking up against police brutality, all kinds of. There were so many elements that they were kind of speaking on back then that today that, you know, it's relevant. I think it's definitely worth a rewatch.
Yeah. Well, for me, I think the show mostly holds up today and it's definitely worth a rewatch. I think they did like a good job of covering taboo topics that still have some significance. But I feel like the show is kind of niche and doesn't have like the mass appeal, and not because it's a black show, but mostly because it's a college setting, right? Like, right. I feel like only about 20% of people actually go to college in the US. So for some people, it won't be really relatable at all. And I feel like as a person who was born in the 90s, a lot of references go over my head because it's so, there are many political things or like politicians and things that they bring up that I'm like, I don't even know who that is. So yeah. And I think that the show is pretty relatable for people who were college age at the time that it was on, and even college age people now based on what topics they're covering in that episode, and attendees of an HBCU.
Yes.
But again, I agree that like the aspect ratios were off, the quality of the cameras was pretty low. And one of the things that bothers me is the overacting.
Yeah, there was the first season was really bad.
I would argue that throughout the entirety of the show, there's this hyperbolic overacting that happens quite often. And I'm annoyed by it. And I feel like the topics in the show are relatable, but some of the characters, just the way they act feels like too character-y. I don't
know. Right. I know what you mean. And that, see, that's what I'm saying. That's when maybe it doesn't hold up. They were just like, get these black people on the screen, get them to say this thing, and we'll deal with it later or something. But that's the one thing about 80s and 90s sitcoms. It was just get it on the screen.
Yeah. Well, regarding rewatchability, I think that if you were into the show years ago and wanted to revisit it, you'd love it still.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed rewatching the episodes and laughing and like witnessing this very specific cultural moment. Yeah. And of course, we didn't have time to review the other episodes, but there are other ones that cover things like HIV, domestic violence, divesting from companies that are unethical.
Racism. There was quite a few racism.
Yeah, episode. Racism. Yeah. Yes.
Political.
Racism, police brutality.
The riots. Rodney King riots was... That started that next season. We just finished the last season.
Yes. There's even an episode, I don't know why this episode sticks out in my mind, where they talk about Waiting to Exhale when the book first came out. And oh, so wow. There's also like the weaving of these other cultural moments, like real life cultural moments, like the Rodney King situation or verdict, and weaving them into this story. And so in a lot of ways, the show is very like time capsule-y, right? Like if you want to know about what's happening at that time.
Yes.
You definitely see they had what a big it
thing
looks
on
like
election.
Through. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Wasn't Maya Angelou in an episode?
I believe so.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yes, I think
as
so.
As herself, I believe. Yeah.
Yes, I believe so as well. But yeah, if you want to know what life looked like and what was at the forefront of Black minds, like Dad said before, you know, from a college perspective, this is a great show. And it's kind of like a history lesson a little bit. So if you have a chance to rewatch it, you definitely should.
One thing, I'm gonna put Bill Cosby back in it. I got to give him credit for helping make this show. But it looked like he had a lot of help with, and he was giving Debbie Allen, who is Felicia Rashad's sister. Did we mention
that? We did not mention that, but yes, Debbie Allen, who is the main director of this show, is Felicia Rashad's sister.
Right, she's a famous, she was started out as a dancer. We knew she was back in the 80s. She was on some shows and given her opportunity. And I'm assuming he was behind a lot of this. And for him to be where he is now, it's mind-boggling. It really is. I have to mention that.
It is, yes. And Debbie Allen has gone on to do a lot of other things.
Yes.
Debbie Allen is probably the only person that I can think of that reminds me of Grandma, that like looks like her.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, she does Grey's Anatomy now, and I think directs some episodes for Grey's Anatomy as well. So she's still out here, you know, working and doing her, you know, stuff in the background, behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's talk about the reviews for this show. IMDb gives A Different World 7 out of 10. Dad, what do you think about that rating?
As far as the quality, that just from outsider looking in, that's probably spot on. But as a Black man and young, no, it gets more than that for me. But I can see where people that, it's so niche, like you said, it's real specific. And it's probably a reason nobody's wanted to tackle it. And Bill Cosby had enough clout to, we're going to put this on the screen. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't say no to him at that point because what he had done for TV so far. So, yeah, I think that's, you know, it's right on for the general population, a 7 out of 10.
Yeah. What would you give it from just your perspective?
I'd give it about a 9. I really would.
Okay.
The only thing I wish they would have really had the music of the times, but I know that costs money. But, yes, I don't think I wish they would have had the music.
Well, I mean, on En Vogue's episode, they sang Free Your Mind.
Yeah.
On the final episode of the season, they sang End of the Road by Boyz II Men. In the first season, there was this song is a little older. There was a competition where if you won the competition, you'd be a background singer for Gladys Knight. And they sang Love Overboard with her. Okay. So the music probably a little more present there than you might remember.
Yeah. But I'm talking about hip hop. But anyway.
Oh, I mean, Tupac was in an episode, but I don't know, and Heavy D, too. Yeah, but the actual music, yeah. Well, not the Little Red Riding Hood rap doesn't count. Okay, for me, as far as the rating goes, I also want to mention this because we haven't brought it up yet. A Different World is credited with an increase in Black people enrolling in college.
Yes, I remember that.
It's a very positive kind of externality from, and a clear indication that representation really does matter. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, when you see something, it makes it feel more possible. Yeah. So a lot more people went to college and went on to do any number of things, you know, with their lives because they saw these college students excelling on a college campus and wanted to experience it for themselves. So it did really have a positive impact on a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the rating goes, I feel like the 7 out of 10 is right on the money for me. Yeah. The series is historically and culturally significant and it covers serious and taboo topics, but chronic overacting, the fact that we have to throw the first whole season away is pretty damning. So.
Right,
and also because I was younger, you know, and didn't get to really experience the show in its heyday, I don't have the same closeness to it that Dad does. So 7 out of 10 feels more appropriate for me. Yeah. And I'm with you on like seeing how a lot of people won't be able to relate to the show. So I get it. And I feel like it's a decent rating.
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you all so much for listening to our review of A Different World here at Submedia Reviews. I want to say a special thanks to my dad for joining me today. Did you have a good time, Dad?
I sure did. Thanks for having me.
Yes, of course. As always, I enjoy having you as a guest on this show. Listeners, let me know what you think about A Different World. Did it hold up for you? Did you watch it recently? Share your thoughts with us on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
Join us next week when I review Lady Killers, a 2004 movie featuring Tom Hanks and Irma P. Hall.
You don't want to miss it. Peace out.
Thanks for listening to Submedia Reviews. I hope you enjoyed our trip down memory lane just as much as I did. If you have any suggestions for movies or TV shows you'd like me to review next, or if you just want to share your thoughts on today's episode, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Pinterest at Submedia Reviews and on submediareviews.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you have a moment, please leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps me improve the show and spread the word to new listeners. So until next time, peace out, home slices.